You're listening to FMGRadio.com. Welcome to Generation Reinvention, How Baby Boomers Are Changing the Future, with your host, Brent Green.
Welcome back to Generation Reinvention. I'm your host, Brent Green. Executive producer and director Keith Famey is a 9-time Emmy Award-winning filmmaker and founder of Visionalist Entertainment Productions, which he established in 1997. Keith is a Renaissance man in the true sense of that word. He has a rich history of entrepreneurial adventures. He began his career as a chef, lived in France, has owned restaurants, and has won food and wine awards. He became a celebrity chef on the Food Network and produced 32 segments of Keith Famey's Adventures. He also ended up on Survivor, the Australian Outback. As testament to his tenacious personality, he was the last survivor voted off the show. His current project is a 3-part documentary film series entitled The Embrace of Aging. Each documentary focuses respectively on the aging processes of men, women, and the end of life. Each film searches for revelations about how men and women from diverse backgrounds and cultures face the inevitable, how they are embracing aging today. Keith's production company, Visionalist, has created moving documentary films, and I'll give you a couple of examples. Detroit, Our Greatest Generation, is a film about World War II veterans and a tribute to the greatest generation. The premiere, held at Detroit's Fox Theater in December 2009, attracted 3,200 sons, daughters, grandchildren, and relatives to salute their heroes on the big screen. The second, Our Vietnam Generation, is a film dedicated to the unsung heroes and survivors of the Vietnam War. Again, an emotionally charged premiere attracted over 3,000 attendees in January 2011. So this special edition of Generation Reinvention will examine how men are changing, aging, and adapting to this life stage based on Keith Famey's extensive travel and interviews worldwide. I'd like to welcome to the show Keith Famey.
Hi, how are you? I got to go back to the tenacious thing. Is tenacious good or bad?
I think it's great. I think it's a great quality, Keith. Well, you know, I wanted to kick off this show so our listeners can learn a little bit about your work in this new film in your voice. So I'm going to play a clip from the film, and then we're going to come back and have a conversation.
Guys are more used to define themselves as sort of, this is what I am. This is what I've trained to be. This is what I am. This is what I do. And so when that changes, you know, when a part of your body doesn't work as well, or when you no longer have your job, or some young person goes past you at work, all of a sudden you think, well, who am I? And I think men really struggle with the who am I question as they age.
You know, it used to be in the Stone Age, nobody lived long enough because we'd get eaten as we got older. But now, modern society and medicines let us live a lot longer, and so we wear out.
This film's trailer reveals some of the confrontations men have with their aging and mortality, as suggested by the comments from boomer aging expert my colleague and friend, Ken Dykewald. And Ken has been on this radio show in a previous episode. So, Keith, what are some of the major revelations that have come your way while filming this documentary? I'm sure there are many, but what comes to mind most immediately?
We don't know what the hell we're doing. I mean, it's, you know, it's the blunt truth, and the scary part about it is that modern medicine has enabled us to stay and keep a human body alive a lot longer, but not necessarily keeping us alive healthier. You know, the goal with the film is how can we live longer, healthier, and not be in a setting where we're, you know, in a hospital bed or hospice for months on end waiting to die because we've got some kind of terrible diseases because of our lifestyle that we've lived. So in setting out to do this film, you know, everyone is, you know, the media and everything and companies and exercise gurus and gurus and gurus and everybody, how can you live forever? Well, you can't live forever. But how can we live healthier longer? And so, and I don't have the answers. I mean, I turned 52 and it was kind of a wake-up call for me. I turned 50, I should say. It was kind of a wake-up call. And I thought, gosh, I'm on the other side of the fence. I have more time behind me than I do in front of me. And I clearly have more healthier time behind me than I do in front of me. And when my father died about 8 or 9 years ago of Alzheimer's, and I was his custodial guardian, and I took care of him, and you know, for a couple of years, and all the way till the very end, and I was there when he took his last breath, and he died, and you know, it was a very, you know, it was an emotional experience. It was somewhat relieving that he was done with the battle. It was loneliness that I was losing my dad. It was curiosity of what do you do and where do you go? And it was disheartening to think that he's worked his whole damn life, you know, providing World War II veteran, bombardier, B-17, you know, raised family, everything. And this is it? This is it. Really? Come on. Who's joking? Is there a camera somewhere filming all this? This is really a joke. This is it. This is what happens. So I think it was really, you know, that along with a lot of other things I've done with filmmaking over the years with a lot of elderly individuals and immigrants and veterans and so on. And then, of course, I turned 50, and it was just, I think it was time to kind of try to understand what's it all like really to grow old, and who's doing it well, and who can we learn from, and what can we learn, and how can we apply it to our lives, and is it genetic? Is it learned? Is it a combination of genetic, but I can change genetics because of if I change my lifestyle? Do Holocaust survivors live longer and healthier because of what they were able to go through and maintain? And are my generation a bunch of wussies? You know, and so I had to go out on this search and try to, you know, film and interview a lot of people. And so I had to really hand select individuals that I thought really had some answers or at least had some clues or had enough knowledge. Because I don't have them. I'm a curious guy that goes out with the camera and starts asking the real questions. So Ken Dykewald is probably one of my most important interviews. And I think I kind of caught him off guard. You know, Ken Dykewald is the founder of AgeWave. He wrote the very famous book, AgeWave. He's the guy that, you know, in his younger years was saying, hey, everybody in society, guess what? At some point in time, there's going to be millions of people getting old all together. We better do something about it. So he really had his finger on the pulse of what's going on in America, in our society. And then all of a sudden, he's 6 years old, and, oh, I'm one of those guys. And so I think when we, you know, I sat and interviewed him at his house, you know, he was expecting more of the normal kind of interview questions, but I wanted to know about him. What are you doing? You've been watching this curve happen, and the baby boomers, what are you doing about it? And so his interview was very insightful and very, very important for this film.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing the film for many reasons, one of which will be to see your segments on Ken. Again, he spent a good hour with me on the radio show, and I've got to say that's one of my favorite radio shows. Ken is a great interview, and he has tremendous insights. Plus, I look at him as a not only a thought leader, but kind of a role model because, you know, he's making it happen in a way that embracing his aging, but on the other hand, not allowing himself to cave into aging. You know, Keith, one thing that we share in common, which we have not talked about before this show, is that I also was with my father for his last breath and went through his whole process of dying with him. And it was exactly the year I was 50 years old. So I turned 50, and then I have this profound experience of watching my father leave the planet. And I must say that started me on my journey also. You became a filmmaker and started focusing on Embrace of Aging as a major project. And I started working on my books about the future of boomers and aging. So we have that very much in common. What I'd like to know, and we're going to be talking about this throughout the show today, but if you had to think of a couple of aha moments throughout all the filming you've done, and you told me that you've done 95 hours of raw footage for this upcoming documentary, are there any stand apart aha moments that just really grabbed you like you couldn't believe?
Yeah. I mean, I just, gosh, there's several, you know, and for this conversation, I'm going to actually open up our website. You know, the website's theembraceofaging.com. There's a section on there. It's called In Production.
Right.
And I'm going to open that up. And In Production kind of just showcases through stories and photographs of everything that we've ever filmed since the day we started with this project, which, you know, I've done that, and I do that with all of our projects, but it's important. I think people are able to follow the project and see where we're at and where we've been and where we're going with it. But it also is helpful for me as I'm starting to build the film. So you want to talk about aha moments. So
well, just give give me one right now or two.
Yep, I got one.
Because I'm going to be circling back around with specific questions on some segments as we go through the show. But I'm trying to look for that, you know, that moment where you just almost fell on the floor. You were so astounded in that moment.
Yeah, I wouldn't say the word was astounded as much. It was just that. It was an aha moment. I was in the mountains of Sardinia with Dr. Tom Rafai, who's the head of metabolic and nutrition for St. Joseph's Mercy Hospital in Pontiac, Michigan. Uh-huh. So we went to Sardinia, Italy, to the mountains of Sardinia, Italy, to spend time with the men there for a very particular reason. A book was written by Dan Buettner about blue zones. So we're spending this week in the mountains of Sardinia to try to understand why do these men, of all men in the world, are some of the groups that live the longest. So I'm, you know, and I've been to Italy before. I've never been to the island of Sardinia. And there I am spending time with these guys that are, you know, 89 years old. You ask them, what kind of vitamins do you take? Vitamins. What's a vitamin? Well, what kind of medicine do you take? I'm not sick. When do you go to the doctor? When I'm ill, I don't go to the doctor. When's the last time you've been to the doctor? Can't remember. Interesting. All right. So, and you spend time with these guys, and you watch their very simple lifestyle. Everything they eat, they either raise or they grow. Very simple. And they walk just about everywhere. So here, after a few days of spending this time in this lifestyle, I realized that it's not a very complicated answer. We as Americans sit a lot. They walk a tremendous amount. We as Americans eat a lot of processed food. They grow everything. And they also eat less calories than we consume. We'll eat a huge plate of food. They'll eat a much smaller plate of food. So you start looking at those things, and I started thinking, oh, my gosh. And I literally came back from Sardinia and changed my lifestyle because of that. And because of that, you know, I've become a lot healthier. I've lost probably 8 pounds. I eat very little pastas or white flours or breads, and neither do they don't either. And I watch and I eat a lot less, and I try to be more active. And I've always been active, but I've literally changed with some simple little calibrations, have altered my life by ways of that. And that was a true aha moment. I sat on the plane coming home going, aha, this is so simple. Why don't we just apply this to our lives? Surely we can add 5-10 years to our life, or a couple years, or at least ward off some potential diseases that we could get just because of the stuff we eat and things we don't do.
Very interesting. And obviously, we're going to be talking.
You want another one?
Well, sure. Go right ahead. How about another one?
Psychology. Psychiatry. I've spent a lot of time with psychologists and psychiatrists, and I wanted to talk about, very specifically, about the man and the relationship he has with the woman and how that affects his life and the things he does or does not do that he should try to do differently or be. You know what the problem, guys? We're not honest. We are individuals that do not necessarily want to fight, especially with our spouses and loved ones, for a reason. We don't want to fight. So what do? Most of the time, guys will put it away. I'll save it for another day. I'm not going to worry about it. I don't want to argue about it. I don't want to do this. And what happens is, so interesting enough, is a lot of guys have buries those things for such a long time and become habitual about doing it that eventually that alone builds up a tremendous amount of stress, unhappiness, depression, and sickness. So you ask the simple question, why do women live longer than men? Women are a lot better at being able to communicate. Number one, they have no problem talking their feelings, you know, which is great. But guys have always been that we're the hunter-gatherer. We're the, you know, we're the individual that needs to be the strong one. We don't cry. We don't do this. We don't do that. And a lot of times that works against us. And probably one of the most significant things about guys being able to be guys with guys. So, you know, I went and spent some time with, I went out to Jackson Hole, Wyoming with a group of guys. They do a thing every year called Manuary, where they go skiing and snowshoeing together. They don't run to bars and see girls. They go to art galleries. They just spend time together. That, from a psychologist and a psychiatrist standpoint, is so healthy for the man to be able to be a man with other guys and be able to do that. And most importantly, to have their wives and spouses and girlfriends, whoever, support it, not guilt them for doing it, not say you can't do it. And there's a lot of guys out there that sit on the couch going, I can't, I could never do that. She never let me do that. Why?
Well, I think that is a very valuable piece of advice, because I know I've felt the call of going off on guys' road trips and things like that, just as my way of trying to reconnect with some basic parts of maleness, as it were. Well, we're going to take a short break for our sponsors. My guest, of course, is Keith Famey, documentary filmmaker, who is doing a remarkable job of prying open the doors to better reveal our perceptions, attitudes, and ways of coping with inevitable aging and death. We'll be right back with Keith Famey.
You're listening to the FMG Radio Network, where our motto is have fun, make money, do good. We provide platforms to individuals who have a cause, message, or information that they would like to share with the world. If you'd like to join the FMG family and have your own radio show, please call us at 1-800-470-4982. That's 1-800-470-4982. We look forward to hearing from you.
In our last segment, Keith Amy mentioned a little bit about the Blue Zones. Let's hear a clip from his movie trailer about the Blue Zones.
My role in medicine is to help patients achieve a lifestyle that helps improve quality and also helps improve quantity and prolong life.
And as they got closer and closer to the concentration of longevity, they were just calling the area inside those circles Blue Zones.
I ran into a book called Blue Zones by Dan Buettner, and we sent out ourselves on a quest to see for ourselves what it is about the lifestyles of these Sardinians that allow them to live so healthy, long, and disease-free.
To be, would you go along with someone like me?
Keith, in our last segment, you did mention the Blue Zones and Dan Buettner's work, and you talked about Sardinia. There are more Blue Zones than just Sardinia. What are some of the other Blue Zones? Did you visit any of them and interview some of the, you know, people that live in those Blue Zones?
For this film, we only focused on Sardinia for this trip, but you know, you've got Blue Zones like Okinawa, Japan, Loma Linda, California, Costa Rica. I think the one of the Greek islands. It'll come to me in 1 second. But Dan Buettner wrote this book, you know, a few years ago for National Geographic called Blue Zones. You know, and he took time to really understand what a blue zone was. I mean, he actually coined the blue zones. He's the guy that really figured out, hey, wait a minute, there's people living older than we do in America and healthier than we do in America in different parts of the world. Why is that? And he went out and did that study and wrote a book on it. And so in doing this documentary film, we focused in on one area, which was, you know, the area of Sardinia and men there. Hopefully for the film on the women, I'd like to go to Okinawa. But, you know, the significance of the Blue Zone or the significance of that lifestyle there is really dramatic. I mean, when we are facing, you know, obviously an obesity issue in America, which is overwhelming, diabetes, which is overwhelming, I had to really carefully figure out who would be the best person to take to a location like that could really embrace it medically, that was the type of doctor that spends a lot of time in that world of diabetes, obesity, and that metabolic part of your what goes on within your body. And that's why I picked Dr. Tom Rafai. And, you know, he, as you'll see in the film, he's fantastic. He engages the men really well. There's a great scene of him walking with a 102-year-old, and the 102-year-old says, you know, we maybe you should slow down a little bit. But the guy's walking pretty fast. He's, you know, Dr. Tom's like, hey, this guy's walking a lot faster than I would imagine. So it was that it was, you know, he's a 40-year-old some doctor who really engaged that those men there, and in turn, it was a really tremendous relationship built between them and him. And, you know, to capture all that on camera was really great. And you could see him not only as a doctor, but as a guy being with these other guys, just, you know, I get it. And, so I think it's going to be a really going to be a very important part of the documentary, because everybody should be able to walk away with it going, aha. Now, if you could take the aha moment that you gain from that journey that you're going to go on with us and apply some of it to your life, then you'll benefit from it. If you just don't do anything, and that's fine. And, you know, that is some of the problem, by the way. Actually, it's a huge part of the problem. There's a tremendous amount of information out there in the world today through all kinds of research and medical doctors and you know, exercise therapists and so on, of things you should do to live healthier. But, you know, by nature, the human being can be lazy and become set in their ways. And you know, I'll do it tomorrow. I'm going to start tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Well, tomorrow comes, I'm going to wait another day. What's another day? Well, before you know it, that another day is another month, and another month is another year. And if you don't make an effort to start soon to do something as you're getting older, you know, the woulda, coulda, shoulda is what those last words you'll be talking about, as Dr. Tom would say on your deathbed. Woulda, I wish I coulda, shoulda, you know, I should have done this and I could have done that, but it's too late. And, well, you know, there's a section in the documentary I'm calling Every Man for Himself. And in this part of the film, I'm going to identify, and I point blank ask doctors. I've said, come on, it's got to be confusing. It's confusing to all of us. You tell me it's not confusing to you. Because doctors by nature live in a somewhat of a tunnel in the sense that they're busy. I mean, these are busy guys and gals, and they have their own lives, and they have kids, and they have their own problems because they're human beings. And so they have their own days that are busy. And if they're working 10, 12 hours a day, and all this new research and data is out there, how much of it can they absorb and apply to their own practice and their own patients, right? So with that being said, we as the consumer, we as the everyday guy out there at 50 or some years old, we have a tremendous amount of information coming to us every day. You know, New England Journal says this. Newest research says that. Take 2,000 milligrams of vitamin C every day. 1 month later, stop taking 2,000 milligrams. Yeah. So I've said to doctors, isn't this confusing to you? They, yeah, it can be confusing to us. Well, how the hell do you think we feel? And if I'm 50-some years old and I can be confused, how do you think a 70-year-old guy feels that can barely navigate around a computer? And you put an 80-year-old guy out there who's trying to navigate through all this stuff. We're an information-filled society, which is amazingly exciting and daunting. It can be as great as it can be, and it can be as confusing as it can be.
Sure.
You go back to the guys in Sardinia, you know what? They're just living life. They've been doing it for hundreds and hundreds of years. They're doing the same thing. You know when it's sad? Because you're starting to see the westernization creep into the mountains of Sardinia. We found a McDonald's bag
on the
corner of the road from down on the water where the touristy areas are. There's a McDonald's down there. Dr. Tom and I got out on the car to do a stand-up little interview as we're driving into the mountains, and there was a McDonald's bag on the side of the road. It was almost enough to make you cry because we knew exactly what that will mean.
Yeah, and I've seen that in my travels as well. Suddenly, you know, you go to this rich historical area that, like in Brussels, Belgium, and this magnificent square, and then over in one corner sits the Golden Arches, and you go, oh, come on. But, you know, so far we've talked about aspects of the film that I might call psychosocial. You talk about some of the cultural issues around men and aging. You obviously have done an extensive effort to get around to some of the top medical experts and medical researchers that are pushing the envelope on the science of, I guess you could say, aging better, aging longer. So, in a nutshell, can you tell me what you believe the essential takeaways are in this film? What are the calls to action do you feel that you want your viewers to finish the film and then think and do?
I think that the film is going to touch different people in different ways. Clearly, there's going to be guys and gals, but there'll be guys watching the film who are very athletic, very healthy, and on a normal, you know, regimen of keeping healthy. But at the same time, they have a very difficult, complicated relationship that is keeping them in a world that they don't want to be in. So from that standpoint, the segments in the film about manuary or about the man cave and the importance of the man cave and so on, some of these elements to the film may be very beneficial to them in different ways than an individual who doesn't have those things going on. And then there's the, you know, the blunting, you know, what kind of things can we do to live healthier and who's doing it? You know, a few months ago we filmed with an 81-year-old, an 81-year-old neurosurgeon. This guy does OR. He's in OR room four times a week. He's 81 years old, an amazing guy. You know, his simple rule in life is no elevators, no smoking, no booze, takes the stairs everywhere. Okay. How much of it is genetics? I'm sure there's a, you know, a great deal of genetics. How much of it is attitude and life and the way he lives his life? A tremendous amount. So I think that, you know, people will walk away from the film because we have so many wonderful human interest stories of people doing it right or people that are struggling. There's a gentleman that we're following through the film that has prostate cancer that's terminal. He's a Vietnam veteran. He contracted it through his contact with Agent Orange during the Vietnam War. And he put off having going through a proper prostate exam. Well, it's a terrible thing. He's terminal. He's a wonderful man. We've been following him through this experience and filmed at home with him, filmed the chemotherapy through him, you know, with his doctor. And we sat down and talked, and he said, yeah, you know, I guess it kind of caught me. Well, right there could have an impact on a guy who would go, you know, I've been putting it off for, I'm 55, and I guess I maybe should go do this. So I can't tell you one thing other than maybe by the end of the film, everybody will walk away with one element. It'll mean something different to them is how can I live longer, healthier, and happier? Can't live forever, but how can I apply some of the things I've learned from the different scientists from Harvard Medical School that we filmed with, or the men from Sardinia, or the individuals that are going through some really difficult times. What can I take from that I can apply to myself? Or how can I feel better about myself knowing I'm not the only one? So, you know, there are, I think that it's going to touch people in many different ways. And ironically enough, the trailer, I've gotten more comments. I mean, guys obviously love it and they get it and so on. But I've had comments from women saying, I didn't know, had I known that my husband felt that way, maybe we would have never got divorced. I didn't know that that was what he was thinking about. I didn't know that that was important to him. So I think that the film will touch people in different ways for a whole range of reasons.
Okay, and again, you know, probably the answer that I would give, or probably any filmmaker, who do you want to see the film? And the answer being everybody in the country or everybody in the world. But if you had to zero in on the ideal target segments that you really want to be sure to see this film, who would they be?
I wouldn't say everybody because a 30-year-old guy doesn't get it.
Right.
He clearly doesn't. And I didn't get it. So I could never have made this film when I was 30. They don't get it and they don't care. They can't identify with it. So when you ask the question, who do I hope who do I feel needs to see this film? I think any guy that's pushing 50, clearly after 50 and before 70, should see the film. I think that every wife or spouse of a married man, they've been together 20, 30 years, should see this film. I think daughters and sons should watch the film with their dad, because maybe they'll see things in the film that their dad's not doing. Hey, Dad, you know, have you had your prostate checked? Oh, no, I don't. I'm fine. But have you had your prostate checked, Dad? I'm not going to go do that. Dad, really? I mean, you know, I think that sons and daughters who care about their fathers should see the film. Dad, you haven't gone on a vacation in years. Why don't you and Uncle Louie go for fishing? Go away for, oh, I can't do that. I can't get away. You need to go, Dad. You know, those, I think that anybody out there that loves the man in their life who's getting older should see the film. Any guy out there that's getting older that loves his life should see the film.
Excellent, excellent answer. And as you were talking about prostate cancer, and in the trailer there are some vignettes of the unfortunate Vietnam vet who has terminal prostate cancer, I can't help but think about one of my folk music heroes, Dan Fogelberg, who probably wrote some of the most beautiful songs of our generation. And I remember he had to interrupt a tour about mid-2006 because he had never gotten his prostate checked. He had cancer. And unfortunately, we lost Dan Fogelberg in 2009, and way too early in his life. He was around 57 years old, 58 years old. Yeah. So when we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Keith Famey about his Embrace of Aging film, with its first issue, or first in the series, to be focusing on men. Stick around. We will be right back.
Be sure to join us at fmguniversity.com. That's where we can turn your passion into business within 30 days. Put some fun back into your life, show you how to make money, and do good for yourself and others. That's why we are called FMG, Fun Money Good. Get started today. Go to fmguniversity.com.
As I've mentioned several times during this show today, we will be seeing several movies coming from Keith Famey. The first, of course, being on the Embrace of Aging from the male perspective. And next time, his next film will be from the woman's perspective. And he will begin producing that film in 2012. I'd like to play another segment from the trailer, which is pertinent to this issue of men and women and how they look at their aging process.
The three words that men hate to hear, even as we age, is something that commonly comes out of a woman's mouth. We need to talk. He goes, oh, no, not that. How long is it going to take? And it's always about him. It's always what's wrong with him. He doesn't want to hear it. But what men have to learn is how to listen, because women need to talk to feel better. But women have to learn how to talk so he doesn't feel blamed, so he doesn't feel criticized.
We want to beat our chest, and we want people to point at us and beat their chest back. We want to scream and shout. We get so excited on the hunt. A man has got to roar, and he has to have a cave in order to do that.
Now, that particular clip features John Gray, who wrote famously, "Men are from Mars, women are from Venus." So, Keith, in your explorations thus far, which have primarily concentrated on the male half of the species, what have you been learning about the way men look at their aging that may be different from their female counterparts?
Well, you know, being a guy and, you know, having had women in my life all my life, my mother and, of course, my significant other's sweetheart, 12 years, my daughter, and so on, you know, you learn as a guy how to navigate, or you think you learn how to navigate through life and relationships with the female species, who I love and adore. But as any guy will tell you, at times it's difficult. I mean, it's difficult for a whole host of reasons. First of all, we're simple creatures. We really are. I mean, we don't need a lot at all. And we're really not as intelligent as we like to think that we are.
you know, women are, I think, are far more intelligent, and they far more analytical, and they evaluate things in a different way than we do. We can pretty much go into a store, pick up what we want, and be gone in 10 minutes. The female species, that gathering process could take hours. But there's a reason for it. Well, that idea that we are so different in the mindset, I needed to talk to some individuals that I felt that could understand that dynamics of that. And you know, being able to do an interview with Dr. John Gray, who wrote the original book, Men Are From Mars and Women Are From Venus, was really great. I mean, he was funny. He was candid. He was, you know, he said a lot of the things that guys need to be heard. At the same time, he said, by the way, guys, it's not all the women's fault. You have to look into yourself and find new ways of dealing and understanding and listening to conversation and not trying to be fixers. We'd like to fix everything. I mean, you know, there's a problem. Someone comes to you with a problem, we fix it. Same thing with our significant others. They come to us with a problem, we want to fix it. They don't want it fixed. They just want it heard. Well, we're always trying to fix. That's what we do. That's our nature. The other person I interviewed, which is a marriage counselor, yoga instructor, Eric Pascal from Yoga Shelter. He's got them in L.A. and through Michigan. Really a cool guy. The guy looks like, you know, Patrick Swayze.
Right.
Who walked into the room. And he's that mindset, you know, and, you know, a really straight shooter who does a lot with people. So they both had a lot of things to say that I think that guys, when they watch the film, they'll go, yeah, we've got somebody out there representing us. We are being represented. Things are being said that I necessarily can't say, but you know what? I want it to be heard. I wanted my loved one to know that it's important that I'm respected, that I feel respected for the things I do, as opposed to, oh, he's home again. Well, he's home again, but you know that coming home again and the work I've done to develop the home and have the home and all the stuff I do in my day is important to know that it's important to you that I'm important to you. You know, and after people have been together a long time, we all take each other for granted. Guys still need, and sometimes as they get older, need more and more to know that they're important. And one of the questions I asked a lot of psychologists and psychiatrists and John Gray and everybody, and I've asked a lot of guys this question point blank, including I'm now doing interviews with spiritual leaders for this film, and here's the question I have, and I ask you, why are older men attracted to younger women?
Well, that is a question with many answers, I'm sure. But
it's not that complicated.
Right?
It isn't. See, that's the thing. And here's the very small aha moment there. As men get older, the emotional need of the guy becomes stronger. The physical need becomes less. As the emotional need becomes stronger, the importance of the spouse and their loved one to know that they become more emotional, that they enjoy and respect more the admiration for who they are and what they've done and what they do every day. But when those things fall behind or are not recognized, and they are not, it's not relevant. And the guy starts to feel he's not relevant because he's getting older. He's like becoming invisible. When a younger woman notices that in that older man, all that you've accomplished, who you are, how important you are, you know, you're an intelligent guy, all this kind of stuff, and their spouse necessarily maybe does not recognize that. If that man sees that woman and that woman sees that man, that's it. That's the spark. It's not necessarily just sex. And a lot of times the society is, he's chasing a younger girl. He's just, you know, he's a pig, this and that. Not necessarily. A lot of times it's a guy's just looking to be, you know, as he's getting older, he's watching things slip away. His relevance is falling. He's not the big guy in the pride anymore. All these things are falling. It's human nature. It's part of the beast that we are. And it's the fact that a society is just saying, hey, I get it. I get it. And so sometimes the guy being able to outwardly say to his wife, they've been married 30 years, hey, honey, here's a really big deal to me. I now feel like I need to hear that I still am important to you. I, you know, what I do is important, as opposed to you're just always mad at me about something.
Oh, interesting. Now, And this really does touch on some important areas and areas that I'm going to be very eager to learn more about as I watch the film when it's produced and ready to go. And I have something that is of real interest to me, Keith. We've had, as I've mentioned, about 53 very bright individuals come on this radio show from every different spectrum of the so-called aging and business industry. And the question that I am grappling with, because we know that we are all aging, we all, even the youngest of us are aging, but, and we also know that a generation is 2 years short of being completely past the age of 50. In 2 years, the youngest baby boomer will be 50 years old. So most of the major social movements, the liberating movements of the 20th century, began not with some kind of passive awareness or some just, you know, casual insights, but with outright demonstrations and civil disobedience. So, for example, 1968, the women's movement really launched into hyperdrive with the protests of the Miss America pageant. And then, of course, in the gay liberation area, it was the Stonewall riots, which occurred, I believe, in 1969. And then in the anti-war effort, it usually, a lot of times people look at October the 15th, 1969, as the precipitating date that this whole anti-war consciousness pretty much spread across the country. Whether you agree politically or not with any of these issues, the point is they were sparked by something profound or symbolic. Do you have any hope that will happen with our consciousness and our attitudes about aging moving us to a more positive level?
Well, when you talk about the 60s, you know, that was probably one of the most defining periods, one of the most defining periods of our history in America for a whole host of reasons. You know, you had a lot of things happening at the same time. You had how many presidents were assassinated. You had civil rights. You had free love. You had music. You had a different type of individual growing up that didn't grow up in the Depression. So you had all these elements that were taking place, and then you had a war at the same time. So you had all these things happening that created a period in our history that's so significant to society. Will the aging movement play a role like that when we look back on history? I don't think that, because aging is so personal. Aging is very personal, and everybody goes through it, or they die. There's nothing in between. You don't skip aging, you either die, or you go through aging, then you die. I think because aging is so personal that the outwardness of it won't be as strong as something like that. On the other hand, because of science and technology and the desire, the deep-rooted desire to find the fountain of youth like never before, our fathers weren't searching like we do and like the younger generation just before us now are searching with a frenzy. We're going out of this game in life kicking. We're not going to go easy. And therefore, the research and the technology and the money is driving, you know, how can we live longer? What can we do? It is so enormous. And it's worldwide. It's not just the United States. It is worldwide. I think that if you look back on it, when 20, 30 years from now, there's no question that this generation and what they're doing in their desire to live longer or healthier longer will be a very defining period. Will it be as colorful, as glamorous, as pretty, as controversial as that of the 60s and early 70s? No. But will it be a defining period of time? Absolutely. And it has a lot to do with those baby boomers that came from that era of the 60s and 70s, and it's such a defining time in their teenage years. They were a certain kind of a person. Well, now as you're getting into the aging process, they're going out. Like I said, they're not going to go out easy. And there's a huge fight not to go down. And So they're applying those types of same type of passion and desires they had back then when they were maybe in those teenage years. Now you're seeing it, you know, they've gone all their life working hard, raising a family, and now I'm not, don't have to work as hard, or maybe I still do, but my family's grown. And I feel it. I see, I get up in the morning and I don't, my knees hurt, or I can't run as fast, or all these different things, and my hair's falling out. I'm great. You know, all these things that happen when you get age. There's a real fight not to, you know, to hold on to it. How long can I hold on to it? And the interesting thing now is if you watch with Hollywood, here's it, I've been really watching this, is the new level of embracing aging that you're seeing. It makes me feel so good about the film that we're doing, because you start seeing some of the older actors that 20 years ago they'd be somewhat retired. Now there's this resurgence of these older actors and the admiration for them. But who's admiring them? The younger generation is learning to admire them. Who's admiring them? The baby boomers. Why? Because the baby boomers is a big sector of society. So when you see Bruce Willis in an action film still now, it makes us feel good, because we're like, we still are relevant. See? He's still relevant. I'm still relevant. That make sense?
Yes, it makes absolute sense. In fact, I'm thinking as you're describing that of Meryl Streep, age 62. Who...
Meryl Streep, Morgan Freeman.
Right. Just the enormous change, and well, Annette Bening, you know, the kids are all right, you know, Academy Award nominee for that very fascinating role as a gay woman in that movie. And yes, we are seeing a true movies for grown-ups revolution, if you might. And so when we come back, I would like to, first of all, get some of your ideas about what you believe to be some of the changes that you think are going to happen as a result of all the research and work you've done. And then I want to talk just a little bit about the movies or the documentaries that are yet to be produced, but are in the queue and will be produced soon. So stick around. We'll be right back with Keith Famey.
You're listening to the FMG Radio Network, where our motto is have fun, make money, do good. We provide platforms to individuals who have a cause, message, or information that they would like to share with the world. If you'd like to join the FMG family and have your own radio show, please call us at 1-800-470-4982. That's 1-800-470-4982. We look forward to hearing from you.
Okay, throughout the show, we've learned a great deal about what's going to be coming in the film Embrace of Aging. I'd like you to listen to these final thoughts.
The man hasn't changed. The man still wants to go into the woods. The man still wants to hunt, collect, and gather. And the man still wants to walk through his door at the end of the day and say, honey, I'm home, and be met like a hero.
I don't know how long I will live. I may die tomorrow, as far as I know, but I try to prolong it as long as I can. Everybody has to die. Everybody who's born has to die one day. We can't get away from it.
I refuse to sit on a bench and wait for death. I want to live, love, dance, and let death wait for me.
Why not search for the fountain of youth? I mean, it's a pretty neat goal. There's very little downside to it.
The idea is, if I can't win it, how can I learn how to embrace it?
Okay, Keith, so I guess the question is, you know, the generations of men getting older now, do you think they will learn to work with aging better and, in effect, change the context of aging, broadly speaking, in society, perhaps more effectively than their forebears did?
Well, I think that the significant difference between the baby boomer generation and our fathers is we're not going to go out, and I say we're, I'm the younger generation of the baby boomers, but the baby boomer generation is not going to go out easy. They're going to go out kicking and screaming. They love life. They don't want to. They're not satisfied with just going through that same phase of life, of retirement, time on their hands, saying goodbye to their loved ones, and death.
It's just not going to happen. And because of the research and the technology and everything that's out there in the media today, of the goal of trying to live longer, living healthier, the need for the older baby boomer generation to work longer into their golden years for reasons of financial need or reasons of the fact that they just have the ability to. Those things alone are going to drive the fact that it's going to be done differently. Will it be done better? I don't necessarily know it. I mean, in some ways it will be, but, you know, there's a lot to be said for that greatest generation. They went through the Depression. They went through the, you know, World War II. They went through the Holocaust. They went through some unbelievably difficult times that created an attitude of existence of no matter how tough it was going to get, it'll be fine. It'll be better. They've seen it tougher. We've never really seen it tougher. We've never really done that. And that's what we really have to give due to our that greatest generation, is that attitude, that zeal for life, is rooted deep in them within the attitude, and very few things in life seem to get them down. So while we have a far more arsenal ability of the ability to live longer through a means of healthier living and medicine and technology, I don't necessarily know we have the mental capacity, and I think that's probably an area that we really have to look into in our own inner perspective of ourselves to say, you know, maybe whining about every little thing is just, you know, it's overrated. You know, look at all that we have going for us, which enables us to live longer, healthier, and really, really embrace that. I mean, I don't know if back then during the greatest generation in their 20s and 30s that they had the self-help books and how to, you know, attitude adjustments and all that. If you look at, you know, you got all these self-help tapes and stuff, and this has been going on for years, but it's like our generation. It needs all this help, this mental help. And they didn't have that then. So I think there's a lot to be said for them in relation to the way they lived life or what they went through as part of their life. Now, can we do it better? Oh, yeah, we've got far more to our advantage, where the deck is stacked in our favor. Will we do it better? Some of us will. I mean, I've been with guys that are in their 70s and 80s, or just approaching their 70s or late 60s, that are really healthy and active, and you know they're going to go that extra distance. They've retired, they've generated, stepped into a whole other line of career or another life that is, it's like they've stepped in a whole other life. But there are those guys that, you know, I've seen that are in their 50s that are just struggling and whining and everything's this and everything's that. And I look at a 90-year-old guy from the greatest generation, he'll kick his ass. So, I mean, we have the ability to do great things in our lifetime and living longer, healthier. Some of us will. Some of us won't. That's just part of life. But we have more on our side now than the generation before us ever had. And, you know, I think that it's up to us to not only use that to our benefit, but then to teach the next generation who has grown up on thumbs on a computer screen and, you know, I don't need to get up and change the TV and the channel. I can push a button. I never had that growing up. I had to change a channel. I'd get up out of a chair and change a channel. Well, they wouldn't even think of that now. So, you know, as our greatest generation would look at the younger generation and said, you guys are lazy. Well, now we look at the younger generation and say, you guys are lazy. It's, you know, there's a certain common thread of existence, of growing, working hard, growing old, and going into those golden years. I say things to my kids. My dad said to me, it's kind of a funny thing, you know?
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this. You've done a lot of work on this first film for Embrace of Aging and the male perspective. Anything that you've experienced so far giving you insights about what's next with your documentary about women and then after that, the documentary on end of life?
Well, yeah, two things really quickly. On women, God, they're far more organized. They're far more unify, they're far more empowered than men are. It's sad. Women care about women far more than men care about men. There's so many. It's such a different human species, and it's fascinating to see. I think that as exciting as the film for women will be for women, it's going to be a real learning curve for men. I think men can gain a great deal from that film about women that we want to do. I mean, I have just in my observation of what I want to do with it. In the film about dying, my goal for that is to really peel back the onion layers on dying from every culture, all different faiths. And it's interesting that now when I go for a walk in the morning or in the evening and I look at the sun or I look into the sky, I look at it different. I caught myself last night saying to myself, is this me getting older or is this me getting wiser? But I find myself looking into the sky with a fascination of curiosity as well as uncertainty, as well as I guess an observation of everything I've been learning about spirituality from all different people I've been with, as well as scientists about the universe. I had a spiritual leader the other day say to me, very strict spiritual leader, Presbyterian faith, he said to me, you know, even though I preach what I preach and believe what I believe, we're just not sure. The scientific world is teaching us things that we're learning that we just didn't know 30 years ago. It's opening up a whole new realm of thinking that we have to embrace the thinking at least enough to at least think about it. So dying is
something I'm going to look forward to see not only the one on men and what you've disclosed and uncovered. And that film will be coming out in the fall of 2012. And then I assume the other two films will follow in 2013. Is that kind of the rough schedule so far?
That's our goal. That is our goal.
Okay. All right. Well, I want to thank you, Keith, for joining us today and giving us a preview of your documentary film series, The Embrace of Aging. This has been a terrific conversation.
Please let your guests know, you know, they can go to the website, embraceofaging.com, to, you know, watch it, look at the trailer, and just learn about the film.
All right. And, of course, that'll appear on the page where the podcast will end up. There will be links to Embrace of Aging, and I also encourage our listeners to go to v-prod.com. That is the corporate website, and you will see also lots of other information about Keith's other films that he's done along the way. So again, thank you so much, Keith, for your time, and we very much appreciate having you involved as a guest in the show.
It was an honor to be here with you, and you are a perfect example of what they did not do with our other generation. They did not talk about aging, and here you are talking about it.
Every week, and we very much appreciate having wise souls like yourself. So I want to thank our listeners for joining the show. You can post your comments and questions on my Facebook page, that's facebook.com/generationreinvention. And this show will end up there with more information about Keith. And you can also follow me and send direct messages on Twitter, @BoomerMarketing. I invite you also to see my blog, which is a continuing conversation about the future of aging. And it's in its seventh year, and you can find it at boomers.typepad.com. So tell your friends, colleagues, and clients about a worldwide revolution. We discuss it here weekly, and we call it Generation Reinvention.
You've been listening to Generation Reinvention with your host, Brent Green. Visit Brent at his website at generationreinvention.com. And for archive shows, be sure to visit his show page here on the FMG Radio Network, where our motto is, have fun, make money.